Without any further ado, as they say, a big welcome to Mike. Unfortunately, his camera's not working on his laptop, so we've had to. What's the word?
They've put me on a GoPro in the boardroom at Wigan. This is not my.
There you go. That's what we've had to do. Yeah. So, right, Mike, you want to give yourself a little bit of an introduction, and then we'll hear about your backstory, please.
Okay, so. Yeah, Mike Cooper, rugby league player from Warrington. Played for them for a very long time. Had a stint in Australia and then moved over to Wigan last year. But through that journey, there's been some ups and downs. There was some a major accident when I was 17, which put me in intensive care and caused me a whole world of issues from a mental health point of view. And there was some pretty other major incidents as well around that time, which were all pretty negative. And I think I've learned a lot from those incidents and turned them into positive. So we'll delve into that a little bit deeper. And this is the first time I've said this publicly, so you'll have to bear with me a little bit. Try not to get too emotional.
Thank you, Mike. Just go.
Yeah, so fairly normal upbringing, really happy upbringing, and working class family, diehard Warrington Wolves supporters, and rugby league was always going to be what I did. It's in my family, it's in the blood, with my uncle being Paul Cullen, former player and Wolves coach and legend. So that's always what we did. School wasn't always easy for me. I didn't feel like I fitted in, but I sort of really found my sort of niche in sport and competing. There was a little bit of bullying there at times, which I sort of hid to myself. So as I got to about 14, 15, it sort of came a bit more to the forefront, and I started to retaliate in a different way in those situations, which kind of started a trend for me. Which was, when things weren't going well, my reaction would be in a hot-headed, aggressive manner, which would be full of intensity. And that sort of has been a bit of a key theme, I think. And through going through bits of therapy that I've gone through from those incidents that have happened throughout my life, I've learned that there was a pattern of behaviour which I started to follow because it was successful, because it stopped that first thing that was causing me a problem, which was the bullying from happening. So goes through my childhood from a, rugby point of view. It was very successful. England Academy, going into the first team, was pretty happy, extremely dedicated to the game. Wasn't interested in anything else outside of rugby league. When I was 17, I had a bit of a chest infection, and it was decided I was to move down to the reserves or the under 18s and play 20 minutes in that game. So I did so, broke my leg, tib fib break, and then went into surgery the following morning. Now going into surgery, I was pretty away with the fairies on the medication, but then I didn't wake up for, I believe, 9 days after that. I was put into a coma, and what happened, it was called a fat embolism, which came off the bone, traveled through my bloodstream and jammed into my lung. So I stopped breathing just as they were sort of stitching my leg up, and was completely out of it. So I wake up in ICU, not knowing what's going on, not knowing what's happened, and basically was told straight away that I shouldn't be here. And it was made very clear to me that on the Tuesday, the accident happened on the Saturday, surgeries on the Sunday, on the Tuesday and the Wednesday, they were expecting me to not be still alive. So that was a really difficult time, not for me, for my family, me seeing my family upset, me seeing my family hurt. And what was really frustrating is that when you've had a sort of you've missed a near-death experience, you should be feeling extremely positive about life. And I just didn't. You should be feeling really happy. I just wasn't. I was just angry. So angry. Why has this happened to me? frightened of playing rugby again, massively, initially. Really, really, really scared. Frightened to go to sleep, because when they said they were putting me to sleep, you know, I thought I was just going to wake up in an hour and with a cast on. And that caused me a hell of a lot of psychological problems. And at the time, there wasn't the care that's probably there now. I hope there is there now, certainly for young people. I remember being told there was a young girl in the hospital at the time with pneumonia opposite me, and she didn't make it. I did with the same issue. A lot of the things that I could remember weren't actually real because of the drugs that they gave me to keep me in this induced coma. And it took me about six months or so to really start to feel okay again after that, get my strength back. Now, during this time, everyone came to see me. One of the people that would come to see me every single day was my best friend, Lee. He was like my brother. We were so close. And unfortunately, I can't remember exactly the dates. It wasn't much longer after I got back, maybe 9 months out of I've come out of hospital. He passed away on holiday in an accident. So I'd gone from being in ICU, nearly losing my life, major depression from that after that, psychological damage, to trying to get my strength back, to, you know, being with my friends, was probably drinking too much, going out way too much, getting into mischief, to my best mate, who was like my brother, died on holiday. And we still don't know to this day how he died. We know he died from going off the edge of a bank balcony, about 30 foot. And it took him about 3 weeks for him to get his body home. And his mum asked me to go and view his body. So I did. And his face stayed with me, you know, through many, many nights. So that was a really tough thing to deal with as a young man. How did I deal with it? Drinking, fighting, looking for confrontation, looking to go to the extremes and everything that I was doing, at times mixing with the wrong people. This is all while I'm playing rugby league, trying to play rugby league. I had no direction whatsoever. And I was masking a hell of a lot of pain. So this kind of ruined really my early 20s, I feel. Probably until I went to Australia, I kind of got a break from that. And what I learned in the end from going through a lot of therapy, certainly in the last, started about 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with PTSD. Which I didn't realize I had. I was misdiagnosed for many, many years. And I learned that from those situations, it actually brought this huge amount of positives from that. I really have no fear anymore. I don't worry about things too much when it comes to, I have a business now. When it comes to making a decision, I'm very much go for it. I'm very, very driven. And actually driving for things actually makes you feel a hell of a lot better. Now, it has a bit of a bad side to that because you can live too much in fret. You can live too much in drive. And then you need to have a lot of time for some self-compassion. And that's what I've learned. And so, unfortunately, that wasn't it. And from going to Australia, which was a very successful move for me, it seems to be a bit of a running theme of my life, how it's gone. My son was born there, which is an amazing experience, but he was born premature, 7 weeks, and that was a whole new challenge. And you know, about 9 months before I come back, my brother got diagnosed with testicular cancer, and that was another thing that my family we had to deal with. And it's just been one after the other, bang, bang, bang. You can't get a 2-year break without something happening. This is all going on while I'm trying to do my career. And the career saved me, really, because it gave me a a blueprint which was dry for something. You'll be okay when you get to that point. You play for England, then you get your big contracts, you get your return back to England contracts, which is the one that you want, which is your big earning one. You buy a house and renovate it. Once you get to that point, you'll be happy. You're not. You never are. It's the process, you know, that you get, that you find the happiness. So yeah, that's kind of the story of the last how many odd years. I only sort of worked all this out maybe about 3 years ago through going to see a counsellor who was very experienced in PTSD. And she said to me straight away, you are a classic sign of PTSD. I don't have flashbacks anymore. I went through the eye movement therapy. It took about 18 months. I don't get panic attacks or anything like that. What I do get is I probably overreact to things a little bit too much. I overthink things too much. My emotions take control a little bit too much because I don't want anything bad to happen. That's kind of where my brain is. So it's a daily thing that I have to manage. But hopefully, from whoever listens to this, if I can help one person, you know, I get where you may be feeling pretty rubbish about yourself. I get it.
Thanks, Mike. I mean, I think if these people weren't on mute, you would have just stunned them into silence anyway. I mean, that is one hell of a story. And, you know, I have to say hats off to you for sharing it, because that's not an easy thing to do. And I know that people that are on this call now will appreciate that honesty and that rawness. So obviously your work, the rugby in your view has saved you. So how do you see that this generally then, for us mere mortals who aren't England players or anything like that, how do you see exercise and movement helping with mental well-being generally for us all?
Because it gives you a goal. So it gives you a purpose. It gives you something to track, to revisit, to evaluate and set new targets and all those sorts of things. And ultimately, I know from me personally, when we end every season, this year we had the World Cup, so I got about 6 weeks off. If I don't, you know, they say to you, don't train, rest, don't, you know, just let your body settle down. If I don't exercise every other day or every day, I feel awful. Yeah. Maybe I'm a little bit extreme because I've been doing this since I was 11. So training almost every day is normal for me. But exercise, it gives you the endorphins, gets you clear your head. And most importantly, it gives you a goal. And those goals, you know, my exercise is my job. But those goals save my life, in my opinion. If I hadn't have done what I'd done, who knows where it would have been. I wouldn't have been in a good place.
So it's just about people doing it at their pace, at their level, but to actually do something, isn't it? You know, whatever it is, whether it's walking the dog, you know, whether it's going on a ramble with a load of people, whether it's hitting the gym or doing group exercise, it's what works for you, isn't it, Mike? I mean, obviously, you've worked at an elite level. So, you know, I think we all understand that, but it's the principle of it, isn't it? It's having that focus.
Yeah, start small. One of the first things I remember when waking up in the, because in ICU, you come out of there, you're pretty drugged up, so you can't really remember what's going on. But in the high dependency unit, and we've gone from lifting 40K dumbbells above my head in a shoulder press, and the only goal that I had for the first week was being able to lift myself up from, so I could get up to go to the toilet, put myself in the wheelchair, just to be able to pull myself up. And that was that step by step, you know, do them every hour or whatever. Just take it step by step. And once you start realizing, oh, I can do this now, right, I can get up a little bit. And that's kind of how I built myself up. And that's, you know, I guess it can relate to that.
Yeah, that relates to everyday life though, isn't it? It's all about those, what they call marginal gains, isn't it? Lots and lots of little things make one big thing. And I think that probably, especially at this time of the year, let's be honest, some people just go hell for leather, overdo it, and then they say they hate it and they don't want to do it again. Whereas if you start off a little bit, you know, just doing the stuff that they, even if it's a few minutes a day, you know, just building up and building up and doing stuff that they like, eventually those endorphins are going to take over and they're going to enjoy more and more and try different things, aren't they?
I think in any person, team, business, environment, anything that's successful, that's healthy, that's going in the right direction, small 1% improvements is the way to go to keep them, to maintain that. And the successful teams that I've seen, I've been involved in, I've been around, are the ones that do the basic things really well. And as a human being, the basic things is exercise, eating well, getting good sleep, getting some sunlight at some point, reading, you know, like coming away off social media. They're the 1% things, the small things. And I know to be successful, it's the 1% things done well makes you successful and makes you maintain it.
I love that, Mike. Thank you. So you did mention that, you know what to do now. So you obviously still get those dips. So what works for you, Mike? Can you share what works for you if you do think, or when you know that you're going to take a dip? Because I'm guessing that you're quite self-aware now.
Yeah. Biggest thing for me, I mentioned it earlier, I spent a hell of a lot of time in threat,
yeah,
a hell of a lot of time in drive. So I'm in fight or flight mode 24/7. That's kind of how my brain is and wired.
Yeah.
And the key, the most important thing for me is self-compassion. It's time to myself. It's time for me to do something that I want to do. If I just drive for rugby or for business, or, you know, I want a better house or wants me to be perfect, it doesn't work. I need to just stop and slow things down.
And how do you do that? What sort of things do you do? Can you share that?
Simplest thing as turning my phone off, running a bath. It could be going to the driving range, turning my phone off. It could be getting out on my motorbike, my phone's off, no one can hear me. No one can speak to contact me. I just need that time for me to reflect. Walking is a big one for me. I've always been into walking. Set yourself a little goal, do something for yourself, some self-compassion, reminding myself of the good things. And also, you know, actually I wouldn't change a thing what happened to me, because it actually has made me a hell of a lot more determined, more resilient, I think, than I ever would have been if I hadn't been through those things.
Thank you. And I know when we chatted, you're very, very passionate about bringing mental health type of mental health education into schools. Can you tell us about that? Because I know it's a big thing for you.
Yeah. So I just look back at my experience, and I think there's different things on this. I think a school is run by leaders. And I think the more we can train our leaders, the more we can train our teachers and what leadership looks like. I think schools need to have an identity. They need to have a DNA. They need to stand for something. What do you want your pupils to be seen as from somebody else's point of view? And also on the other side of that, I think kids need better understanding of what's actually going on in the brain. There's a lot of talk at the minute about anxiety, depression, mental health, all those sorts of things. Ultimately, a lot of that is all normal. To feel anxious is normal.
Yes.
You know, we're supposed to feel anxious at times. We're supposed to feel excited and love and happy and all these sorts of things. And I think there needs to be some better training. I'm not sure what the current procedures are in school in terms of those sorts of things. I'm not sure on the guidelines. I've been to a few schools. I've told my story. Well, I haven't got into some of the other stuff that are, when I said I went through a bad patch, there was things that I was doing which I'm not particularly proud of. And when I've delivered my story, it's been to those kids to say, look, don't do what I was doing. But education around mental health is so important. It is everything. You know, it's 50-50 with the physical health, isn't it? It's so important.
It's the whole thing, isn't it? You can't have one without the other. And it's just one big round continuum. I was speaking to somebody yesterday at your club, actually. And we were talking about the fact that the pandemic has probably pushed kids back 2 years in terms of emotional development even, and, you know, being able to cope with things. So I think you're right. I think we need a lot more resources to push into school. Teachers, when they were trained 20 or 30 years ago, were never expected to have to deal with this. So I agree with you. We need to have more push, definitely more push that way. I know that your club and a lot of the rugby league clubs and some of the football clubs, in honesty, you do a lot of outreach work, don't you, to community outreach with kids, families and adults around mental health and well-being.
Yeah, and I think a big thing as well, which what COVID has taught the world, is that how we deal with a negative situation and how we deal with trauma. So I'll take my experiences. There was pretty traumatic things happening on a regular basis over 10 years. I never handled any of them right, how you should handle it, how I dealt with it. But I've learned things off the back of that. And I think, what are we learning off the back of COVID? I saw so much in the press around kids and parents phoning up saying, my kids aren't going to get to university because they didn't go to school during COVID and all this sort of thing. Now I look at that and go, well, you know, I get that, but there's also, I'm an employer. There's a guy on the call who I know, Norman, Alan Norman, who's employed. You know, what else are we doing here to show an employee what you're made of and what you're capable of? You know, there's a great book, The Obstacle is the Way, and that talks about how you deal with challenges that happen in life. And are we teaching that? Are we coaching that?
Yeah.
I don't know whether we are. And if we are, we need to be doing more of it.
I think we'd all agree with that. That's amazing. I'm hoping that there's going to be a few questions here for Mike, because the fact that he's come on here and been so, as I say, so honest, so raw, I'm sure that some of you must have some questions for him around maybe your own experiences or want to ask him something else. Don't be quiet. Now stop it. Somebody come off mute and say something, please. Sarah Longstaff, you usually ask lots of questions. Rachel Stokes, come on. Help me.
Hi, Lynn. I'll help you out. Hi, Mike.
Oh, thanks, Jamie.
I don't have any questions, but just well for speaking out about it, because I think what you're talking about is very real for a lot of people, and I think you'll help a lot of people by sharing what you've been through. So I don't have any questions, but appreciate you speaking out about your experience. I think it's really important that more people do that to help others. So yeah, well done, and thank you.
Thank you. Cheers, Jamie.
And very valid. Thanks, Jamie. That's testament to you, Mike. Thank you. Go on, Rach.
Thanks, Mike, for sharing your story. That brought a tear to my eye on some bits. It was I was just thinking about the 1%, the small gains.
Yeah.
Like in our industry, particularly, you know, health and fitness, everybody wants to go for the big gains. You know, I'm going to do that challenge, and I've done it myself this January. I wasn't really jogging, doing much running or anything, and then I signed up for the 40 miles jog for World Marsden Cancer Charity Research. So it's mad, you know, the way we put ourselves up with these big challenges.
Yeah.
And I just wondered if you've got any sort of tips on how to just think, oh, that little success was worth it. Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, it's fine. Well, well done you for signing up. That is a big jump. I think for me, there's a couple of things on this, is that with exercise and training, the way, you know, we do it here in a professional environment, what are the basics to make you get the best out of yourself? Like I said before, so food is one, sleep's one. That for us is all measured. For example, when we come in the morning, we do a flexibility test. We have an iPad and we fill out a questionnaire. How many hours have you slept? What's your mood state like? All those sorts of things. So if you're being honest on all those sorts of questions, the physios can get a pretty clear, and the FC guys can get a pretty clear picture of where you are at physically. But obviously, you know yourself where you are. And I think another thing as well is that we spoke about this the other day, is that with exercise and training and team sport, a lot of people look at the things that they don't do very well and try and work on them to try and get big uplifts in performance. What's really important is to look at the things that you do well and practice those as well. And that's the same in business, I believe. You know, a lot of people stop and go, oh, we're not doing this good enough. what are you doing well? Because you can get uplift on that as well. I think that crosses over to health and fitness, to education, to business. I think it crosses across the whole thing.
That is awesome. Thank you.
I love that.
Brilliant.
Right. That is absolutely, yeah, it is in business as well, isn't it? You know, stop crucifying people for doing things not so good. Concentrate on their strengths.
Yeah.
And it just crosses in, and that you'll get a lot more out of people that way. I must agree with you on that. Is anybody else brave now? Hi, Norman, come on.
Hi, Mike. Thanks very much for sharing your story. Question I've got for you is that, you know, through lockdown, when I was, if you like, coming through that, there's a large part of my thinking was just about being kinder to each other. And when you were touched on you spending more time on your own and in your own headspace, do you ever think, or do you ever give yourself the opportunity to be grateful and be grateful for, you know, put yourself in that mind space about what you're grateful for, bearing in mind all of your past story?
Not enough as it should do. I am. What works for me is to drive for something. But as I mentioned before, I'm very aware of the negative effects that can have on me. Mm-hmm. So I have to play a very fine balance and a bit of a game with myself. But I'll give you an example of that. We did a Q&A here last night for a supporters trust. It was a long day yesterday. We were, you know, I'm up at 6 and we didn't leave here till 4. I'm home. I saw the kids for 20 minutes. I'm back on the motorway back here. Left here at 9 o'clock. So that's a long day for rugby league training. And I just stopped a second. I looked at all the pictures around the canteen we've got here. And just, I'm trying to practice mindfulness a little bit more as well. And be in the moment a little bit more, which is important. Stopped and thought, this is unbelievable that I'm here. These people are paying to come, you know, to put money into the club to see, listen to me. You know, and I'm moaning about it. I'm tired and complaining about it. Yeah, it was just a moment of reflection, and I'm channeling that a little bit more. I spoke to the group about this as well, also yesterday, about us doing that as players, spending a little bit of time when you're driving in your car and just stopping and going, how's today been? And really delving a little bit deeper into that. How's it really been? Because sometimes you can think you're having a bad day, and actually it was only 5 minutes out of 24 hours. And it can kind of really put you in a bad mood for the following day. So having a bit of time of reflection is something I'm trying to work on. It's not my strength.
That's so honest. You know, I think one thing that we've all got out of this today is your absolute honesty. And it's so refreshing. So refreshing to hear the honesty with, you know, no holds barred. Thank you so much, Mike.
No, you're welcome.
And that's Jane. Sorry.
Who's this? Karen McIntyre?
It is Karen McIntyre. I was driving, sorry, so I couldn't. I'm safe now, so it's all right to speak. I'm just saying, I work in education setting, and I'm just wondering how you think we are going to get all this into, because I do think it is needed for the kids nowadays, and they've had so much over the last couple of years. They do need to learn more about mental health. How are we going to get it in? Because there's so much pressure at the moment in the schools to get the curriculum in, because they've missed so much time that we're forgetting the mental health thing. And obviously budgets are short. So what ways could we bring this into the school setting?
That's difficult for me. Is it Karen who's answered that question?
Yeah, sorry.
I don't know the answer to that question, Karen. I'm only going off my personal experience because we're working on a project at the minute with Ben Dunn and a guy called Martin Littlewood that we've had to put on the back burner a little bit, just with us all doing different things. And Ben's a former head teacher. Martin is a professor at the university and works in Premier League football on psychology and sports psychology and leadership. And it's something that we're trying to delve into a little bit more. I just want to tell my story a little bit. And my angle on it is that through negative moments, you can learn a hell of a lot about yourself, and you can actually use that and be so powerful for moving forward.
No, I completely agree. I think there's, I go into different schools as well. So there's anything that I can push into the schools please pass on any details, because I do think it's needed. And I think kids who do suffer trauma, a lot of the times it can be used as an excuse for poor behaviour,
yeah,
rather than them using that trauma to excel or use it to make them grow or develop.
I did it. I did that. You know, I definitely did that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Cheers, Karen.
Thanks, Karen. And again, off the back of that, I know that when I was speaking to the community manager at the club yesterday, he was saying that Mike and the first team players, especially going into schools, Karen, have such a major impact on the kids. They just want to spread the word about, you know, happiness and obviously with mental health as well, happiness, nutrition, all of those messages. Because a lot of them idolize the players. If Mike says jump, they'll jump higher. So these community outreach projects, I think, could be very, very a very positive impact in terms of school visits.
Yeah, I think one thing, Lynn,
that
we do well in teams, and I don't know if this happens in schools or not. We are made very aware that we need to understand the why of people. Why are they here? What makes them tick? What makes them play well? What makes them happy? What makes them functional? Because obviously we're all about performance.
Yeah.
We're all about winning. So we have to be like this. What's that person's why? What makes them be the way that they are? And that's something that we do a lot of in our sport. And we have had some, I've been in situations which you probably couldn't do in business, and you know, where lads have been sat in a circle and you've had the guy in the middle and it's literally been brutal honesty. This is where you are, this is the way they would present. Now obviously that couldn't happen in day-to-day life, but you find out the why of people. Why are you here? What's your driving force? And once you can get that connection from someone, you can start to use it, you can start to make it work for them, you can start to help each other, start to understand them a little bit more. So I think there's a little bit of that in with schools a little bit. I don't know. I guess in the morning when the register's being done and someone says, are you okay? You don't really know if that person's okay. You don't really get to know. And that will be due to a time thing. Yeah. You know, it's very difficult to do that across a lot of pupils. And as I said to the coaches that's before, you're a leader or a coach or a school teacher and you've got 20 kids in your class. That might be one 2-minute conversation to you, but that could be that kid's most important part of the week. That being honest, and that's important to remember.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant. Right. Well, I think we're running out of time a little bit here. I don't know what everybody else is doing in terms of other appointments, but I just want to say a big thank you to Mike, because I think, as I say, I can't emphasize enough just how I think you have kind of silenced everybody in a positive way and made everybody think. And I think that we'll all go away from this particular session thinking long and hard and thinking more about ourselves. So I want to say a very big thank you to you, Mike.